God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anybody here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would just like to welcome you. Anybody here, first 30 days? Evan, I see your finger up. You want to unmute and say hello?
Yeah. Hi, I'm Evan, alcoholic. I'm on day, tomorrow will be 7 days. So.
All right. Welcome, brother. Glad you're here. Awesome. Anybody else? All right. Did James make it in here? Yeah, there's James. Hey, James, you are... James is 24 years sober today, and I'm going to ask him to read the preamble, please.
I'm an alcoholic named James. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Thanks for letting me read.
Thank you, James. Happy anniversary, brother. So the format of this meeting is an open speaker ask it basket. Tonight, we are very excited to welcome Candace from Los Angeles, California to tell her story. I've been looking forward to this all week, but especially all day today. And after she shares, we'll take a short break at the top of the hour. We'll call for a few announcements, seven tradition, et cetera. And then we will ask the questions that you submit in the chat to the user questions for the last half hour of the meeting. So just thrilled to have Candace with us tonight. I don't want to take up another moment of your time. I give you Candace.
Thank you so much, Dave. I really appreciate it. Hi, everyone. Candace Moore, alcoholic. And thank you for allowing me to join your meeting. I am in Los Angeles, California. Welcome to our new friends. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll share with you what my sponsor, who is now in the big meeting in the sky, used to always say, and that is, you've been given the keys of the kingdom. Something else that should always be added is that this is a program of action. It is not a program of whether or not I feel like it. There are so many things that I haven't felt like doing over the years, but what I really don't feel like doing is dying drunk. I can assure you it would be an entirely different look than the life I have today. Funny thing is, we don't ever, and by funny, I mean, not ha-ha, we don't ever die, you know, in some satin bed, you know what I mean? Like, it's never like the movies. It's usually like in a back alley, in a seedy situation with a stranger and sketchy circumstances. And, you know, that describes my drinking, sketchy, seedy and sketchy. And it doesn't matter how I would dress it up. And so my sobriety date is August 16th, 1995. It's the only date I have ever had. And that means that over the years I've been sober, I've had to become willing to surrender behaviors and belief systems that would not support me staying here consistently. That's a big word for a sober person in Alcoholics Anonymous, consistently. 25 years is the length of time I've been sober. I have never done anything consistently outside of my recovery. There are people who have worked for companies, you know, they're like, oh, I'm retiring. I've been with the same company for like 25 years. I was like, what? That's crazy. Like, that just is insane. I have my own company now, but I would leave. I remember my old sponsor, Clancy, he was like, you will stay here at least 2 years. I was like, no. And he said, yes, you. And I was there for like several years, but it was literally because he got tired of me going from one job to the other, to the other. And so recovery, there's so much I have to share with you. So I'm happy that I had a great nap because I had pancakes earlier and that I get to have this time. So the look today is very different than when I came to you, which is just one of the many, many reasons I love Alcoholics Anonymous, how kind you've remained to me, right? So I got sober, I was 96 pounds. Now, for anyone who was newer in their first year, do not get sober to get something back. You are setting yourself up for a disappointment. Right? Because hopefully, as we go through this process of unfoldment, the process of unpacking, which is what recovery is, you will be in a different place and you won't need what you used to have in order to be whatever you define as okay. But so not everything will come back. However, weight usually will. You may not get anything else, but weight will run to catch up with you. And so I'm not 96 pounds today, but I was then. I was 96 pounds when I got sober, and I would drink, enhance my drinking with a few things that kept me up for 8-9 days at a time. I was very alert, very focused during those times. I was missing my front tooth because I shared an opinion that wasn't supported. Mm-hmm. And I never stopped talking, right? And I didn't have any hair on my head. I don't mean I had a short precision cut bob from a high-end salon. I mean, I was bald-headed. So I would drink and there were things that were in my hair and I knew because they became activated the drunker I got. I remember telling my friend, you know, when you're drunk, one, everyone's your friend, two, you got to talk about in any and every slurred thought that comes through your head. And I remember telling my friend, I was like, there's something up there. They're moving. And she was visibly alarmed. She leaned back, fearing they may jump from my scalp to hers. And she asked me, she said, how do you know? And I told her, very matter-of-factly, you know how we are when we're drunk, like, duh. I said, while we were talking, they ran from this side to that side. And she shared some information that I embraced. She said, you know, rubbing alcohol sterilizes anything. You know, you just look back on the conversations you had. I am a writer, and I remember thinking that I had unlocked the key to life, and I would wake up, there would be paper strewn about all over the floor, and I would pick up like a post-it, and it would say, the, like that was it. Like that was a whole enchilada. And anyway, so I remember going to the store, getting a bottle of rubbing alcohol, because it's always been about action. And before I took any action, I set everyone down and I told them, I said, look, it was a group conscience. That's what I had. I set them down. I said, I know you're up there. I know you are up there. You can stay, but I'm going to sterilize you. And so I would pour rubbing alcohol all over my hair. It was very soothing in the beginning, very soothing, like a meditation, right? And then after a while, they began to get immune to it. And they got really aggressive. And so I had to get aggressive. I remember I took a pair of scissors. I cut off all of my hair. And then new friends, half measures avail us nothing. I took a shaver and I shaved it all off to the scalp. I would wear t-shirts on my head as if they were fashionable turbans, making my own statement. And that is what I brought to you in Alcoholics Anonymous. Hold on. I have a heater. It was baking me. So, you know, here's what's interesting. I was 28 years old when I got sober. I am 53 now. I looked way older then than I do now. I always say Alcoholics Anonymous is a fountain of youth. I was so worn out. I mean, worn out when I came to you. And you were kind to me and you've remained kind to me over the years. I was not kind to myself. But me getting sober and looking like that, those were just optics. I don't ever want to get confused and think that the optics are going to make me one thing or the other, right? Because as an alcoholic, especially a lot of us have the gift of gab, you know, we can dress it up and start spinning it with some words and everyone thinks everything is good. All of a sudden, someone's hung themselves. I know several people throughout the 25 years that I have been sober who have taken their life. My sponsor I had for 1 year, good woman, 36 years sober. And I had, you know, it just wasn't a fit for what I was looking for. And so I had another sponsor and I got a call from a friend sharing that she had took a gun and blew her brains out, 36 years sober. And so you have to wonder, we talk about these steps and the importance of them, but clearly that is an example of, you know, making a decision to turn our will and our life over to what, right? Because in that moment, a power greater than herself was, you know, the finality of leaving this earth. And so when I got sober, I remember I had gone through a rehab, and I'm so grateful to have a place that took me off the streets. It is also important that I clarify, a rehab has nothing to do with Alcoholics Anonymous. They are a business, and Alcoholics Anonymous is for fun and for free, and it is our text. And so I remember, you know, the rehab, when I got into the sober living portion where I could come and go, I hadn't yet gotten my tooth fixed. My hair was like a little peach fuzz, and my weight was slow to come back. I naturally, right now, I'm a size 4. And so I was a size 0 minus then, right? And so I remember we would go to meetings, and after the meeting, someone would say, you know, Candace, call me tomorrow if you need a ride for the meeting. I'll come pick you up. Call me an hour before. Someone else, before the meeting started, would pat the seat next to them and say, Candace, I saved a seat for you. Those were huge things. I saved a seat for you. I didn't have my tooth back. My hair was, I've had long hair, short hair. My hair wasn't back. I saved a seat for you. And then after the meeting, you guys were going out. You know how we like to go out when there's no pandemic, right? You guys were going out and you invited me. You're like, Candace, we're going to go get something to eat. Do you want to come? But here's when, this is the magic right here. Before I could say, I don't have any money, I think you could look at me and figure that out. If I didn't have a tooth back, pretty obvious that I probably didn't have any money. So before I could say anything, you leaned over real quick to allow me to preserve the dignity I was just rebuilding. You leaned over and you said, don't worry, I got you. That's what you said. Those three words, I got you. Those are power, man. And so it has been my great privilege and pleasure over the years that I have been here to do that for many, many, many newcomers in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got you, you know, and you've had me all this time through good, the seemingly good and seemingly bad. I remember not thinking that my life would be anything that I wanted to wake up to. That's what I remember. It hurt so bad. It just hurt. Everything hurt. You know, I remember over the years, I sponsored several women now, but I remember a couple of newcomers, right? And this is just throughout my recovery. Every now and again, you know, they lock eyes across the room and want to make magic. And so that's when you start getting technical. You know what I'm talking about. They'll come to you and they're like, well, in the book, I mean, people say that you're not supposed to date in your first year, but that's not in the book. They only want to talk about what is and what isn't in the book when they want something, right? And so, you know, of course, in step 12, in the 12 and 12, right, it does talk about boy meets girl on AA campus, and assuming they're both grounded, hello, in this process before they, you know, engage. But the reason that that is suggested, because I come to you in the manner in which I describe, it's not just about me not having my tooth. It's not just about me being bald headed as a grown woman, right? Looking anorexic. It's not about that. It's about the behaviors that have accompanied the deterioration of my spirit to get to that place. And so I got the tooth fixed, the hair comes back, the weight stabilizes. Let's say I get a job, I've got a great title, right? But here's what takes longer, the healing process, recovering from all the things that led me to that state. And so I meet someone, I haven't done an inventory. So that means I don't have any new information to bring to the table. One more time, I'm falling back on how I look. I'm falling back on optics. It looks okay, but I am still damaged. That means when you and I sit at a table, there's you, there's me, and there's my trauma. There's my shame. There's my regret. That is why it is important I have a spiritual experience as a result of what? The preceding 11 steps. You know, when I was little, my grandmother raised me and loved me. She loved me. I know that as I am breathing right now, that she loved me. She had a weird way of parenting. I mean, she would say things like, if you're going to lay down, get paid for it. I was 8. Whoops. So I don't really know what that meant. I just knew that if I was going to lay down, I need to get paid for it, right? And when I was little, I was terrified of the dark. And so I slept next to her at night, and because she was my safe space. She was my, there was a lot of things happening in our family, crazy. And so she was that safe space for me that I could just go to sleep. And I remember in my little kid brain, you know, looking at her and just like loving her obsessively and thinking if she were not on this planet, I wouldn't want to be on this planet. And so what I began to do is pace my breathing to match her breathing. She would inhale, I would inhale. She exhaled, I exhaled. If she died, I wanted to die with her. That was my thinking at the time. My mother is an alcoholic. She's an alcoholic by her own admission. She was not done doing what she needed to do at that time. I didn't understand it then, but I understand it today. My mother has big boobs. I don't know, because I'm petite, what the big size is. If it's a double D, whatever it is, add two sizes to it. And so my mother packs her pistol in her bosom because she's quirky like that. And so what would happen is her and my grandmother would have a spirited discussion, meaning my mother would get drunk. She would call my grandmother. She would make some incessant demand, to which my grandmother, I knew it was her on the other line, because my grandmother would start to grip that phone, that little vein would pop out in the center of her forehead. And she would look at the phone and say, absolutely not. There would go the phone. A short while later, my mother would pop over and shoot out all of the windows. I remember this, right? Now, I didn't want what she had, okay? There are cousins and uncles in my family. They too suffer from alcoholism, some of them from drug addiction. None of that is why I'm an alcoholic. You know, you just hear so many conversations and you just think, what is the point of this conversation? I don't know if it's as popular in Virginia to do an absolute waste of time with the debate of whether we're recovered or recovering, but I have heard people get into these conversations and I'm like, you know what? How about we skip past all of it and just say we're sober? How about we do that? You know? And so, I remember the ways in which the disease of alcoholism would manifest. Now, in my family, it tends to manifest a lot through violence. Some of the members favored shooting. I favored stabbing, tomato, tomato. So when we all got together, at some point, the police were going to be present. You know, my mom is a big gal, big bone gal, and she believes in cooking from scratch. I don't. Why? Because it's overrated. That's why. So if my mom were cooking and, you know, invited me over or demanded, whatever, I mean, there's like some discussion about that, you know, I would have to go. She's such a great cook. It is unfortunate. She is so crazy because she is such a great cook. She could have a restaurant, but she's wacky. And so the way I knew when to make a move when I went over my mom's house, because understand something, my mother was always getting her drunk on. Anything I say in reference to her, preface it with that. So I knew where we were by the music that was playing. I would go over and the music was upbeat, R&B, upbeat, old school tunes, right? You know, the Temptations, right? The Whispers, and the aroma was just wafting throughout the house. So I knew it was okay. I knew it was okay. And I remember she'd go into Diana Ross and the Supremes. Now that's a little tricky because sometimes ego wants to be Diana, right? So she would get a little feisty. You weren't there. Look at my cat. And so then as the day went on, remember she's drinking all day. She's thinking all day. And when we entered into dusk, she began to get a little melancholy, a little moody, right? So she's moving into the Sam Cooke juncture. By the time evening hit, she's playing the blues, Billie Holiday, B.B. King. By the time we get there, you must have gotten your plate. You must be out the door. It's strategic. You got to know when to go, because what happens is she's been drinking all day. She's been thinking all day, and she's not thinking about thoughts of victory and overcoming obstacles. She's thinking of who left when she thought he would stay, right? She's going to start to become sad. She's going to start to cry. And she's only going to cry for a minute or two. And then she's going to get pissed off and want to fight. So I don't want you to think her rude. You would get a meal. You just might limp out with it. And, you know, I remember being in junior high. That's when my drinking happened. I was in junior high. So what was that like? 13. Oh, Sasha, I can't deal with you right now. Here, get down. Put a blanket up. She's still not happy. So demanding. So anyway, I remember in junior high, My friends were drinking and having a good time. I wanted to have a good time too. Very simple in the beginning, but what happens for me when I take a drink of alcohol is I cease to care about you. No, actually that's not true at all. I don't care about you before I take a drink of alcohol. Once I take the drink, I'm now inclined to share with you that I don't care about you. So I'm going to ask you to resist the urge of pulling me to the side, telling me how I have wronged you, allegedly, right? It talks about me in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous in step 3, that I step on the toes of my fellows and they retaliate seemingly. That's a tricky little word right there, seemingly without provocation, right? But I invariably find that I had done something that at some point, right, placed me in a position to be hurt. And we're just going to go through this the whole hour. So, you know, what happens for me is that's why I go through the book, right? And that's why I take people through the book so we can see the progression of alcoholism, that it is, and I just did this. There were belief systems that formed when I was little. There were belief systems that formed when I was little that were unchallenged because I wasn't having the type of conversations we have in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I would just adapt them. I would look at the behaviors of the women in my family are just absolutely treacherous. Absolutely. It put the men to shame, right? But the men are their own deal. And so I interpreted a lot of what a woman is, how a woman behaves, how a woman shows up in relationships in life, right? Based on that information, that unchallenged information. And so as I start to grow up as a teenager, as a young adult, and then as an adult, I am incorporating these behaviors coupled with active alcoholism. I loved drinking. My mother drank gin and milk, so I hated gin. I would never drink gin. But I was vodka. Now, that's my sweet spot, right? And so Stolies, you know what I mean? Put it in the freezer. You know what I'm talking about? Put it in the freezer or Kamchatka. And it was only elegant till I started buying the big jugs. Get those big jugs, make sure you just are taken care of at any moment. And I would mix vodka with Hawaiian punch. I don't even know if they still sell Hawaiian punch, because turns out when I got sober, I didn't really like Hawaiian punch. Who knew? So I remember being 16 and I was living with my godmother. There was a lot of moving around. It was in foster homes, that type of stuff. And you know, I was living with my godmother and she lived very well. And I was under the lash of teenage alcoholism. And I remember she was leaving to attend the Black Caucus Conference in Washington, and she would be gone for 1 week. She had purchased a Mercedes, and she had it, I don't know, at that point, maybe almost 6 months. So she was leaving her car, taking a shuttle to the airport. And I remember, you know, her putting the keys in her candy dish. And before she left, she said something. It's hazy. I can't really be sure, but I think it was something like, "Don't touch my car." I don't know. I can't recall with sufficient force. What I do know is that I didn't think she meant it, right? Here's another thing that I find out about myself as I go through the steps. I find that I operate on a sliding scale. So what you say, I feel I have some wiggle room. What I say is law, get clear. And so, yeah, she may have said that. I mean, I can't even really tell you if that was true or not. What I do know is that I was going to go to a club that night, right? I'm drinking all day, doing whatever else with it. And there was a club called The Whiskey. And I was going to go with my then best friend. And so what better way to go to a club than in a brand new Mercedes? And so that whole day was spent in self. You know how we are, especially when we're going out, how self would be featured, how self would debut, how self would be presented. And as I'm driving the car consumed with self, I ran into someone else's car. Whoops. So my hat's off to the person that had a valid driver's license and insurance. It was not happening for me. But what I did when this little, you know, thing happened is I had pulled over, and I'm not happy we're having to practice social distancing, but I have been a social distancing person from way back. I believe in the personal bubble. I really do. So many people do not understand personal space. And so I remember the guy's car I hit. He was not a respecter of the personal bubble. He was like in my face and his energy was so hostile. Ooh. And he was just like talking about a lot of things. He wanted some type of paperwork. I don't know. What I do know is that he was ruining my chi and he had little spittles coming out as he spoke to me and I was ducking because the little spittles were attacking me. And I was like, his energy is so negative that I had to leave. So I jumped in the car and I left because that's how I live. That's who I am. I am the epitome of delusional and self-centered, self-seeking. Like that is my name. There's like a picture of me. I always think there are pictures of me in so many people's homes with a line drawn through it. You know what I mean? The people who I can't remember their name, so I can't make an amends because I screwed over so many people. So many people. And I remember the difference between unrecovered and recovered is I now don't feel good about that. It used to be a badge of honor. You know, no one could touch me and you know, nothing affected me, but that's not true. Column 3 of the resentment inventory showed me that, what it affect, right? And so I remember jumping in the car and leaving because one, I had to go to the club. Now the whole car has a front, the whole front end has a grin, right? It's just not good. So I drive it back, place it in the driveway, take the keys, place them back in the candy dish, go upstairs, call my friend, tell her we're taking a cab because I made a commitment. You know how we are about commitments. And I knew when my godmother returned, she was not going to be happy about this whole car situation. And she wasn't. She was very peeved. She had seen the movie Tough Love at some point recently and was inspired, drew up a contract of things I was expected to do for having wrecked her car. And I remember her, she was reading them off. Now, it may have only been two, but when you're in self, one is too many. She wanted me to volunteer my time and give of myself to some charitable organization. I thought, oh, what an order. I can't go through with it. Funny thing is, that's how I live today. That's what I do. I look for opportunities to be of service. I feel of purpose. I feel worthy. I find my value when I am contributing. When I got sober, they said, you're a taker. You are a taker, Candace. And if you want to stay here, if you have any chance at staying here, you must become a giver. It's foreign. I remember being in the rehab and I was always running out of soap, you know, because I didn't, it was an indigent rehab and I didn't have anything. So I depended on them for everything, just my basic needs. And I would always come in to ask for more soap. And I remember the admin, she said, Candace, I just gave you soap a few days ago. And I said, but I'm out. And she said, Candace, you have to take a bath on the inside. I remember I didn't understand what she meant. And so I said, so I can't have any soap? And she said, here, honey, do you know what I mean? And so I have a friend and she always says, if you don't go within, you go without. Oh, ooh, that is power. If you don't go within, you go without. The person I talked about, the woman who was just a good woman who took a gun and put it to her brains and splattered them all over her bedroom, big home, long-term sober, husband, long-term sober, both good people. I came from a very big home group and she was secretary, former secretary of that group. A lot of sober parties, sponsored about 27 women, a lot of sober parties at her home. Optics, right? Our book talks about it, that outward appearance is not always inward reality. And so rather than me wondering about if I want to add hair to my hair, or if I want to put some lipstick on, what we are talking about this afternoon for me, evening for you, are things lipstick can't fix. I was out there, I was drinking. I remember my godmother being so upset with me. She was disappointed. This woman opened her home. She was a former journalist, actually for the publication I worked for a number of years, only a number of years because Clancy wouldn't let me leave, right? And so she had been a journalist from there, left, started her own production company, had her home, this immaculate home built from the ground up to her specifications. And she lets me in her home. I let very few people, not just because of COVID, but because I'm sensitive to energy. Very few people come into my space. This is my sacred space. She brings me into her house and that's my thank you. Taking her car. And I remember she was really pissed off and she wasn't just turning it over as I felt she should, right? Because when I am in untreated alcoholism, there is no column four. There really isn't even a column three. There's only columns one and two. I felt she had insurance, so why was she coming down on me? Isn't that crazy? But it made perfect sense at the time. And I remember leaving because, again, she was just not willing to get over that whole thing and just carried a grudge. And so I was working at this store in Beverly Hills and met a couple of people, and one of them gave me an opportunity to work for a record label. When they hired me at the label, they hired me as a receptionist. But I consider myself a visionary. Some people say delusional, I say visionary. And so technically, yes, they did hire me as a receptionist, but really I felt they were grooming me for CEO, right? Because it just resonated better for me. And so you know what happened? I wasn't CEO, but I got promoted and I worked in promotion. So I had the opportunity to promote a lot of multi-platinum artists. And let me tell you what that looks like when you are in your early 20s, when you are young, you are cute, and you have low self-esteem, you latch on to that with everything in you. The industry was a very different world then. There were no reality shows. People weren't so keen on telling their life. It was very exclusive, and I was a part of that. And I knew all these people that everyone listened to on the radio. I was at all these like swanky private parties where you couldn't bring cameras or any of that. And so it was, so I lived for a long time in self-esteem by association. Now, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and you said there is no such thing, but at that time, that would be how I described my life. And that meant that my worth was, well, if I work for this label, I must be okay. If I have this title, I must be equal to you. If I wear this attire, I must be equal to you. If I live in this very affluent zip code, I must be equal to you. If I'm dating the who's who of what's what, I must be equal to you. Alcoholism doesn't care. Alcoholism will fuel those fear-induced thoughts, that fear-induced narrative. And so what happened is a grandmother who raised me died. And I didn't find out until she had already been buried, because the more I got promoted, the more I got loaded. And when I found out and she had already, I mean, there's nothing I could do. And I don't even recall an honest emotion because I was so divorced from my own spirit as a direct result of living in illusions, delusions, and facades. So I remember looking around at my stuff, it not being enough, and that was frightening for me. My friendships were not based on shared goals and common ambitions. They were based on you're cute, I'm cute, we need to hang out. That's it. And you have to remember that I was not raised for academic or corporate accomplishment. I was raised to look cute and have someone take care of stuff for me. And so the fact that I had started, you know, paving my way, honestly, I mean, I got promoted. Honestly, I was good at what I did when I was there, but there was a lot of me not being there. It just so happens that the president, VP, and CFO really loved me. They were loving me to death, unfortunately. You know, they just explained away all my no-shows. Our artists would be dropping a CD, right? And we called it album in New York. I needed to be in New York. Last minute, I just couldn't go. It was fear. I didn't know that it was fear. I never examined it. And I was always going to the doctor for gastrointestinal issues. It was anxiety. It's like, I don't even have the language for it. It was anxiety. All these emotions, all this fear, because I felt like a little kid playing dress up. And I remember, so my grandmother is dead and I'm looking at my stuff. My stuff's not enough. And my head starts talking to me. It was always talking, but like it ramped it up. And it told me that I was living and working in a world built on make-believe, that I needed to get real, which I don't know how to do. I just know how to get drunk. And I walked in and resigned. That's it. You're not coming over here. No. And so, look, see ya. So I remember walking and resigning, and I had been used to having a label behind me. And when I tell you just everything, there's just nothing I wasn't going to get, nothing. And so now I'm on my own, and I'm not a periodic, I drink period. And so I ran out of my money, and then I ran out of your money, and Sasha, Okay, you have to get down. And so I made a decision, she'll be back. I made a decision to step out and market myself in exchange for a drink. And I refer to this as the public relations phase of my development. When I stepped out there, I was young and the investors felt very good about this product and they were willing to invest heavily and repeatedly. And my stocks were at an all-time high. But when you start, you know, missing one or two teeth, all of a sudden people get all stuck up and they don't want to pay full price. And so my stocks plummeted. It's as if one day you are happily living your life shopping in Neiman's. And then the next day you are in Walmart. Now, let me just do a disclaimer here. I remember speaking in Connecticut years ago and I shared this story. I only have one story. And this woman had come up after my talk. She was so emotional. She was like, oh, I really connected with you. And I really identified. She goes, there's just one thing. I was like, oh, what is it? And she goes, I work in Walmart. And I said, well, honey, Walmart is a good American store. And then I said, but it ain't Neiman's. Get out of here. Anyway, so I was out there and, you know, I don't take care of myself when I'm out there. I'm up for days on end doing everything and with everyone, unsavory characters, and I become an unsavory character, right? I never looked at the other part of that equation. So I got pregnant and I don't want to do anything ever to jeopardize the life of an unborn child. Not ever. I do not want to do that. I am not that woman. I will never put a child in harm's way by drinking until I do, right? Because it's always like that. It's like, I will never do this until I do it. I'm not going to do it again until I do it again. And so I remember getting pregnant and, you know, I was on the streets. There's no label. There's no cute, you know, apartment. There's no fancy. There's none of that. That's all gone. I'm living in a five and dime area. I'm now at Skid Row and there's this baby. And so I can't have this baby. I'm not going to talk about whether I am pro or con on the topic. That's a hot topic right now, politically. I am never going to talk about political anything. It's an outside issue. I want to share this for any woman, especially. When I was little, in my grandmother's home, there were men who came in frequently and they were fond of me in the way that a man is fond of an adult woman. And I was 8 and 9 and 10 years old. And because of those experiences, I never wanted to risk having a child possibly become a casualty of the war with self, right? I don't want to pass out and have something happen to my child. And so I made a decision that I would terminate that pregnancy. And then I learned via every news medium that a member of my family had been arrested for doing unspeakable things, horrific things to my little 8-year-old girl cousin, and then took her body apart, buried her in a trash can and put cement over it. And so the person who did that is my mom. And I remember when it happened, you just think, this is not happening. This is not my life. And you also think that it's never going to be anything other than what it is in that moment. And I remember just thinking that the way I lived in that moment would be the way I would live forever. I remember thinking anything of value, anything of beauty, anything of dignity, anything of worth is no longer afforded to someone like me. And so it was not until I came into Alcoholics Anonymous that I learned if I wanted what you had and I was willing to take the actions as outlined in our text, if I wanted what you had, I had to be willing to do what you did, that my life could be reshaped. So it is why I have the type of recovery I have. I have a nothing from the neck up sobriety. I don't take anything at any time that affects me from my neck up. It doesn't matter what goes down the pike, right? My solution are these steps. They are effective. I also don't have any experience with going outside of AA for my needs. For me, they've been met here. And that also has to do with the way I'm taken through this work, right? I know people that they're like, I did 1, 2, and 3 when I got sober and I did an inventory. What's the inventory? Resentment inventory. Then I read it. So none of that does, I don't even understand that. The program is the book. the meetings are how we express our interpretation. The program is the book. So when people come to me, I have a responsibility. I sponsor people with a lot of time. I sponsor people with very little time. They all go through the book. I don't care how much time they have. When they come to me, they have to go 1 through 12 through the book and the additional chapters up to Dr. Bob's Nightmare with me. And then we go through the traditions. That is my role. That's my responsibility as a sponsor. And that, because that was done for me, is how I was able to process like this incredible stuff. You know, I quickly want to talk about when I was 9 years sober and I hit a bottom in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? Because when I was new, I would hear people talking like I'm sharing today, and you just think, oh my God, they had some problems and everything was good. Mm-hmm. So life on life's terms will make you want to get drunk, right? And so I had fallen in love. I was 6 years sober. I had never been in love before, but I had been in many, many relationships, many, many. And someone was always saying, I love you. And because I'm a team player, I would say, I love you too. But I was lying. And so now I meant it. Like I totally meant it. I like loved. And it didn't look like I thought love was going to look. It didn't feel like I thought love should feel. It was verbally and physically abusive. I participated equally in both. And it hurt a lot. And I cried all the time. Love is not supposed to look like that. But you have to remember, I've never confronted the information that had been passed down. And so I don't know that love is not supposed to look like that, because it actually looked like that quite often in the lives of the members of my family. And so my sponsor, Gloria looked at how I was living. And, you know, I sponsored a lot of women. I've always been mega, mega active. I've had hospital and institution panels where we go into a jail or a recovery home or a shelter, and we share our stories. That's what panels are. Not every place has the same definition. And so, you know, I remember her telling me that I needed to leave this relationship, that I was living drunk, talking sober. And I remember not being able to leave because I had attached my definition of happiness, my definition of worth, my definition of being whole and complete to this person. That had never happened for me before. I was a cheater. I was like notorious and reckless, but now I wanted this. And it never occurred to me that I wasn't going to be able to pull it off. That's in chapter 3, right? This utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or the wish. That applies today. I have to be able to identify what alcohol looks like for me sober, because when people go out, it's not because of what they used to do. It's because of what's being done right now. What am I lying about right now? What am I justifying right now? What am I keeping secret? Although I don't call it secret, I call it not your business, right? Alcoholism lives in arrogance. Yeah. And so I remember her telling me that I was living drunk, talking sober. I needed to leave that relationship, which I didn't want to hear. I don't feel I can do that. This is my soulmate. Let's talk about that. And I remember Gloria was sober a long time. She was 29 and her husband was 29. He had 3 months longer. They had been married 39 years, knew each other 7 years before that. They had been childhood friends in other relationships, had gotten together, had children, and they were low bottom drunks. When you're a low bottom drunks, that means your children have a front seat to the alley of alcoholism. But because of our traditions, our principles, their relationship had come together in a way that they did not have to. I'm gonna fan outside of the camera because I'm having a hot flash. Woo. So, you know, their relationship was one that they did not need to constantly post on Facebook. I just love social media where you just tell absolutely every part of your life. So it's like, you know, what's your relationship status? It's complicated. That's ego. That's crazy. No, it's not. And so that means I'm trying to get my way, but I haven't figured out how to do it yet, right? So anyway, I remember looking at Gloria and Bob on the floor. I was 2 years sober. Those are the formative years for me, 2 years, right? When you're still trying to figure out your own identity. And at that point, I was always looking at my sponsor and, you know, if she held her head to the left, I held my head to the left. And she was gazing up at him. They were on the floor dancing, gazing up at him like a starry-eyed teenager. And he was looking down at her with the most tender look I've ever seen. That is love. Love inspires, it renews, it expands, it is foundational. It reinforces, it reaffirms, it is solid. It does not cause you to second guess your worth. It does not cause you to live in paranoia. It does not cause you to live in secrecy and shame. It does not cause you to abuse or be abused. None of that. And so a part of me staying sober has been my willingness to redefine, to be able to look at this and define it and then redefine it, right? And so I remember I didn't want to talk to her about my relationship anymore because she was unreasonable. And I also thought she was jealous, quite frankly. I'm like, she doesn't understand our passion. And so I went to spirit, you know, that's what I do. I just skip the middleman and go right to the source. And so I remember praying, spirit, you know how we are, spirit, give me a sign. Should I stay in the relationship? The police came, whoops, not that sign. And I remember when that happened, you know, the relationship was over at that point. And so what do you do when your relationship's in the toilet? You get engaged, duh. So we got engaged and we were engaged for 6 days, but they were long days, like in dog years. And then I couldn't take it anymore. I threw up every day and lost a lot of weight, which is not good. Just remember it hurting, thinking I was never going to love again. And, you know, I hadn't gotten to causes and conditions. I hadn't reconciled all the stuff that I had done prior to coming into Alcoholics Anonymous. I hadn't reconciled any of that, but I had taken the steps and I had healed in certain areas. And in this one, I was still living in old behaviors. And so it was time that I address it, and it was painful. And I thought I would never love again. And 6 days later, I was in another relationship because you have to let the healing begin. And it was verbally and physically abusive. And the police were back. And I lost all the people I had sponsored for years. And my sponsor was dying. And, you know, my behavior was outlandish. And I continued to show up. I would cry in meetings. I was a greeter. I would cry and greet. You want what we have, you know, just the whole deal, because I will not suffer silently. And I remember going back through the work. I remember going back through the work and doing those inventories, man, resentment, fear, and sex inventory. And I'm going to give a couple of examples real quick before I close out. You know, the resentment inventory, four columns, person, institution, or principle, right? Second column, why? I usually stop right there when I'm in untreated alcoholism, right? Person, I'm pissed off at Tiffany. What? What'd she do? I love that. She keyed my car. What? So normally I'll stop there. Character, assassinate Tiffany, live in sickness. But if I really want to heal, column three, what does it affect? My self-esteem. She doesn't think much of me. Personal relations. She's not a good friend. Security. She's a nut job. I don't feel safe. Pocketbook. She doesn't want to pay for the damages. Sex relations. I don't feel sexy when my car is keyed. Ambition. I wanted us to be like sisters. Right? Pride. People are going to think ill of me. So that's how I do an inventory. All of those are listed, and then our explanations. Each and every resentment. All of them, not one or two like in the book. All of them are listed because all of these areas are affected. Column four. How does it affect my where was I selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, and frightened? Because column four is my mistakes. To sum it up, I slept with her partner. She found out and keyed my car. Whoops. So that's very different than when I first started. When I first started, it was all about her keying my car. But now we move on. I'm talking about, I wanted us to be like sisters. What type of sister sleeps with her friends or her other sisters? Partner. Who does that? Someone with low self-esteem. That's who does that. And so inventory allows me not to look at what I've been saying, but it allows me to look at the facts. It says it's a fact finding and a fact facing process. And I must be willing to do that, knowing that spirit has me, that I will be taken through the other side of it. Until I understand the truth about the stock and trade, right, which is me, then I can't have a new experience. And then the fear inventory. The fear, why I have the fear, column three, if this fear were removed, who would I be? How would I show up? What would it look like? I had never done a three column inventory, although it's right in the book. I had always done the listed the fear and then listed the ways in which self-reliance had failed me and said a prayer, and that was it. That prayer wasn't doing anything to dislodge the fear. The fear is my belief system. I am basing the actions I take off of these fears, these self-defeating, limiting fears. And the sex conduct inventory, answering all those questions and then looking at what could I have done instead. Oh man, that was gold. So I remember the person I was with after I broke up with my fiance was already in a relationship, which was problematic and could ruin my reputation. So I took them right out of that. And so, you know, and when I started doing the sex inventory, that person had pursued me for the better part of a year. And now that I was out of my relationship, I didn't care that they were in one. And so what I got to see is when someone slithers over to me in a relationship, when I'm in low self-esteem, I think disrespect is a compliment. So I got to say what I could have done differently is I could say, no, thank you. I'm not disrespecting myself today. And then listing my ideals. I want a partner I can pray with. If we can't pray together, we cannot lay together. I never knew that someone coming from where I came from would even want to pray at all. I can't tell you how many people I've worked with, how many people simply call me with their stuff because they always hear the part about relationships and they're like, oh, and I'm blah, blah, blah. And I'll go, do you pray together? Well, I don't even know if they pray. So let me get this straight. You're in bed because you probably slept together the minute you met, but you don't even know if they pray. So if a higher power is not the center of my relationship, ego is. That's been my experience. My friend Debbie D from Concord, California, taught me how to wait 90 days. I said I didn't want to wait. Turns out I didn't wait because I didn't think you would wait for me. And I didn't know that. That changed my life. When I saw that on paper, 9 years sober, it changed my life. And so I remember when I began dating and I said, we'll be waiting. I remember how uncomfortable it was. I remember that I was no longer leading with my tricks and all that. I was now saying, okay, I need to see if we are spiritually compatible. I had slept with strangers. Didn't matter if we knew each other in the rooms for years. I don't know what your spiritual values are. I don't know what your life goals are. I don't have any idea. And so, you know, they remember that movie, Jerry Maguire. Oh my God, everyone loved Jerry Maguire. And then you just started quoting that line, you complete me, you complete me. We don't even think about the things we are saying. How absurd is that? You don't complete me, sugar. I am already whole, splendid, and divine. But it is my responsibility to uncover that. Because if I don't, I'm going to look to you as my solution. I stayed in a situation that was horrible because I didn't think I would be loved again. I don't even define love. Like I would never live like that again. So, you know, when I was out there and I was drinking and I had gotten pregnant and I found out that my mom is sick and a murderer, she's killed 2 children, ages 2 and 8. She killed the 2-year-old years before she killed the 8-year-old. And I didn't know it. I just knew he wasn't there when I came over to her house 1 month. And she said he was living with his cousins. When we found out she killed the 8-year-old, I instinctively knew that that's what happened to the 2-year-old. And they discovered his body, same exact manner of death a few years after the 8-year-old. And so, you know, it's just a lot. It's a lot, it's a lot, it's a lot, all day and all night, it's a lot. That one's a lot, that one's a lot. And I remember going through the pregnancy as if I weren't pregnant, doing all the stuff that I had been doing. I remember jumping out of a moving car because I intuitively knew that when we got to that destination, this man planned on killing me. I intuitively knew that. And so when he slowed down just a little bit, I was tucked and rolled, pregnant. I remember all of that. And when I went into labor, wasn't then, but when I went into labor, I was in labor for a long time and I had been up for 3 days straight prior to going into labor, loaded. And I remember giving birth to my daughter, Serenity, and she was so beautiful. And I named her Serenity because I wanted peace. I come from a world of hustlers. I come from a world of, if you say this is what it is, this is what it is. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's the exact opposite. It is shut your mouth and train your feet. Shut your mouth, train your feet. Shut your mouth, train your feet. We don't want to hear what you have to say. You don't know what the truth is. You just got here. And so I remember holding my daughter, and she was so beautiful, and she was shaking. And I asked the nurse, why is she shaking? And she said, because she is detoxing. And that just broke my heart. It broke my heart. You know, my mother is a murderer and my dad is a pimp. I'm sorry, manager. He's a retired manager. And so coming from that background, I had to come in here and surrender 100%, 100%, 100% to this process. Not my ego, not what I think it should do, and not the tone you should tell me stuff in. Like all the things I hear, I'm just like, are you crazy? What are you talking about? I had to do what you did to show up, to get commitments. I am on Zoom and I still have commitments, not one. I have several commitments because I go to several meetings. I'm not a visitor. This is my life. And the people that I sponsor are also required. It's not, and I mean, we have a discussion before I agree to sponsor someone, right? There's no cursing in meetings because I sponsor some amazing, accomplished women. Certainly your vocabulary is wider than you dropping F-bombs in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. No, right? You get to a meeting 15 minutes early because we're on Zoom, 30 minutes early if we're in real life. Your camera needs to be on. No eating on camera. You're not laying down in your bed. It's just crazy, the things I'm looking at today. It's like, have some respect for Alcoholics Anonymous. What is happening here? I don't want to see you eating your dinner. What are you talking about? You know, I told my babies, I said, we are ladies. I used to be wanted to treat it like a lady, but I can continue to act like a broad. And so that had to be surrendered, one awareness at a time. This is awareness. That's all this is awareness. And, you know, my daughter never came home with me and there was no safe place for her to come to. So I just never saw her again. And that meant when I got sober, she was almost two. I didn't know where she was. She had been adopted. And so year after year, I continued to celebrate my daughter. I would donate to charities. I would throw parties, full-scale parties at shelters. I threw a party at Chuck E. Cheese where a kid could be a kid. I invited 35 of my friends, 73 showed up. Everyone was told to bring a gift for a child. And they brought when you tell you bags and bags, bags of gifts. And I was able to donate those to rehabs of women with children. The rehab I went through, I threw a full-scale party for my daughter there. Everything was always for her. I gifted mothers and daughters. When she turned 21, I sent a mother and daughter to the spa all day. Everything I wanted to do for my daughter, with my daughter, I did for someone else. Because alcoholism says, don't tell, live in shame, hold your head down. I don't have time for that. I have a lot to do. If I survived all the things that I'm sharing with you and the 17 million that I'm not sharing with you, but that a sponsor knows, that means I'm here for a purpose. I need to get busy. And so this year, my daughter found me. She found me through ancestry.com. She was 25 years old, almost 26. Every year I go into prayer of how I'm going to honor her. And, you know, I just started going into prayer. What will I do this year? Spirit, what do I do this year? And I was leaving my regular meeting and I was on my way to speak at a meeting I talk at every year, about 300 people. And I was at a red light, wasn't texting while driving, and I saw a message from ancestry.com. I thought it was like my eighth cousin or ninth cousin, because that's what they do. And it was from Serenity, and I got excited. And then I said, no, I'm sure the person who adopted her changed her name. So I opened it and it says, we are related and that you are my mom. And I couldn't drive my car. I didn't know how to drive my car. I was so nervous. Like, you pray for this day. Everything I did was to be ready for this day. Everything I did. And it was there and I didn't know what to do. And so we ended up talking and I saw her the next day and I'm a grandmother just that quick. And so my grandbaby is too, and adorable, not just because she's my grandbaby, because literally she's adorable. And my daughter asked me all the questions you thought she would ask me. And I was ready. Because my life is not a secret, because all my friends know that I have a daughter and I threw a party for her. It was right as COVID started, darn COVID, but people showed up, man. They showed up because they had been waiting to meet her. And it was my granddaughter's birthday 5 days after. So they bought gifts. They don't even know my daughter, except for my story. They bought gifts for my daughter and my granddaughter, because those are the people I share my life with. 3 months after we met, she called me and said, I was thinking, and I'll close with this. I was thinking you should do a motivational calendar or something. This is my daughter. She knows my past. She knows her grandmother's a nut job. You know what I mean? She knows all of it. But because of who I've become as a solid member of Alcoholics Anonymous, she had gone to a meeting with me before COVID. She's not an alcoholic. She was quiet, met some of my sponsees. Because of all that, she said, I should do a motivational calendar. I was just so thrilled and honored. I didn't even think about it, but I was like, oh my God, that's how she sees me. Anyway, 2 months ago, I'm in the shower. Spirit always talks to me when everywhere, but certainly the shower. And Spirit said, do a motivational calendar. And I was like, I don't know how to do that, right? And Spirit said, 12 inspirations. Anyway, the Serenity 2021 calendar has sold over 430 in 30 days. And is that crazy? And my daughter loves it. I did it because Spirit told me to do it. But if you would have told me when I came here, that's not even the nature of my company, it's something else. But if you would have told me that I would be someone who's doing a motivational what? So it was in honor of her. That is crazy. There's so much that you have given me. The rest of my life, I will spend saying thank you. But right now, I'll just say thank you for letting me share. Thank you.
Oh, Candace, that's amazing. Thank you so much. I'm going to allow everybody to unmute just for a moment.
Thank you, Candace.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Candace.
So much.
Oh, amazing. Thank you.
Candace, great job.
Awesome.
I'm so inspired by you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Candace.
All right, kids, I'm going to take the meeting back just for the moment. I've placed the, and just to remind everybody, if you got questions, Candace is going to be here for about another 30 minutes or a little bit less. So if you've got some questions, please throw them in the chat to the user questions. So let's give Candace a break for a moment here, and I'll read the seventh tradition support card. There is a link in the chat. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. I will take just a few announcements for the good of AA by show of blue hand. Grant Harmony.
Hey, I'm Grant, I'm an alcoholic. Word on the street is there's a new meeting coming up. I just posted it on the chat. Mid-Atlantic Group is meeting on Thursday, starting in January at 6:45. It's gonna be a speaker and discussion format. The meeting ID and the pass are in there. So check it out, it'll be a great time. First speaker is Linda W. from Canada. Thanks, bye.
Thank you, sir. Any other announcements? Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Sponsorship in Alcoholics Anonymous is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be here after we close the meeting. Please stick around. You may have come in alone, but you don't have to leave that way. Or if shy, feel free to send an email to info@simpleactions.net. So keep those questions coming in. Oh, Candace, I've heard your story over the years, and I'm so happy where it ends today. It's just amazing. Here, let me pull up the questions here. Okay. We have our first first question is, will you please share your experiences on step 6 and 7?
I would love to. Candace still alcoholic. Yay. So when I am going through the process of 6 and 7 with people I sponsor, we go through the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous for everything except 6 and 7. When we get to 6 and 7, certainly they read the paragraph for 6 and then the paragraph for 7, but we go into the 12 and 12, and that is because step 6 is lack of faith. And when I am coming from a lack of faith, when I feel undervalued, overlooked, not heard, discarded, then natural instincts will far exceed their intended purpose, right? Which is the definition of a defect of character. And so what I get to do is I get to identify, and I could just do it by looking at my day. And when there's a ripple in my day, what is that behavior? You know, people associate greed with money. No, greed is I'm trying to get everything and I'm going to go to any length to get whatever that is. People confuse obsession with love, right? Obsession has nothing to do with consideration or compassion. Obsession is I need to get my way. And so what way in which is that manifesting? And in step 7, because I have the awareness in 6, I don't believe in working on my defects of character. That's crazy. I believe in asking a power greater than myself to remove them, as it says, as I say the prayer. And so I start looking at, you know, if this is the defect to my knowledge, you know, what is the opposite action? I just look for every opportunity to go back to step 2. And that is came to believe that a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity. Sanity is principled living. That is what sanity is. And if you look at how sanity is laid out in the book, step 2 does not end until after we read the first portion of how it works. So in order for me to be restored to sanity, in order for me to look at the defects of character, everything comes back to my relationship with a power greater than myself. Where is spirit in this? Am I willing to choose spirit as opposed to choosing ego in that moment? I hope that helps.
Oh, thank you. Steps 10 and 11. What does your step 10 and 11 look like on a daily basis?
So step 10 for me is actually a 7-column inventory, meaning we do the 4-column, right? The person, institution, or principle, and the 2nd column, what's pissing me off, how it affects, and the 4th column, my mistakes. But the 5th column, because now we're doing a 10th, anything after a 4th step is a 10th. So the 5th column is what are the defects of character? And the 6th column is what can I do differently moving forward? The 7th column, I actually added, I just created it. And that is 3 acts of forgiveness. I'm going to tell you something. I'm not going to get political, but I am going to speak to you from an adult Black woman perspective. There's a lot happening right now and it was making me angry. And I was creating the calendar, which is 12 inspirations. You can't be inspirational and be pissed off. That's what I found. And so I had to do a 10 step because there was a ruling that I just was like, are you crazy right now? And so it was blocking me. And when I started putting pen to paper, which is how I get clarity and invite spirit into that space, I can do an inventory and still be pissed off. Like I see where I've been selfish, self-seeking, dishonest, and frightened, and I still don't like you, right? So that's not going to work. I don't want to show up like that. I want to be a reflection of spirit's love. Truly, I don't want to just say that in the meeting. That's how I want to live. So I had to take it to all the way to the last column, 3 acts of forgiveness. What does it look like? Actionable steps. What can I do? And what that does for me is it gives me the opportunity, you know, my former sober brother would say to get up from the prosecutor's table and walk over to the defendant's table. It allows me to really come from a place of, you know, acting like I'm praying to a power greater than myself. My meditation has changed over the years. I've been making a blanket. My sponsees and I were talking about it this morning for like 3 years. And sometimes I won't touch it for 8 months. It's huge, but I have 10 rolls of yarn. So when I'm out, that's when I'm done. So it's crochet, it's beautiful. And so my meditation is I will do a seated meditation. Sometimes I'll do coloring books. Just regular coloring books, not the adult coloring books with 18,000 lines in it. And, or I'll do a walking meditation where I acknowledge
spirit, the creator in everything I see. I'll do a rollerblading meditation. You know, the biggest growth I've had in terms of meditation is that I realize it, I could do it many different ways. You know, meditation for me is making a loving meal for myself, whereas I would normally go and buy something quick. So it is how I focus my thoughts. It's how I harness them. You know, where am I bringing spirit in and just looking for opportunities to let my actions reflect that I indeed have a relationship with a power greater than myself. Thank you.
Beautiful. Did you ever forgive your family members, and how do you move through those resentments?
Yeah. So I'm 25 years sober, and it was 5.5 years before I could contact my mother. You know, my mother did not raise me. She raised my brother and sister. I'm the oldest. And she just did horrible, horrible things. And you look at how broken our system is that she was allowed to do what she did for as long as she did. Then they gave her additional cousins, two of whom she's killed. And so I just remember thinking, I was never going to forgive her. I was never going to talk to her. I was just angry. If you would ask me anything about my mother, I would just launch into a lot of profanity. And because I have always sponsored, because I've always been active, AA is powerful, man. AA is no joke. I could no longer love the people I sponsor and hate her. And I didn't think that would ever happen, but it was impossible. I am asking these women to take steps they don't even think are going to work. I'm asking them to walk through their fears. And then I'm turning back, and there's just this thing. And underneath the anger was, of course, a profound sadness, confusion and sadness. And I had to sit with that. And so at 5.5 years sober, I found out where she was. I wrote to her. That was my amends. I could not go see her, and she's never had my phone number. And she wrote back, and I asked her how I could make it right. Because an amends to me is, I never say I'm sorry. I say I'm going to amend my behavior. I'm clear on the exact nature of what I've done to harm you. I ask if there's anything I've left out, and I ask how I can make it right. And so I had to do this written form. And she said, by continuing to write her so that we could get to know each other. And it was so difficult, man. I mean, sometimes I couldn't even open her letters. It was just painful. I would see something on the news that reminded me of what she did. And it was just like, it would cripple me. And so I would not read her letter. I would just throw it out, but I would send her a nice card. I would send her money. She likes money. And, you know, she said she's born again. She's not. And so what ended up happening is all those years, when I was 10 years sober, my mother had sent me a letter. I think she had sent me a few, but I wasn't opening them because it was too painful. But I would always write to her, always write to her. And I opened one, and something about cancer. And I was like, oh, Lord, you know, she said she had lung cancer. My mother, she had lung cancer, and she's going to die. And I was like, oh, you know, she's going to die behind prison walls. So I was going to go see her. Took my sister. She does not have lung cancer at all. So, you know, you're just like, what is happening right now? But I continued to write to her. I said I would never go see her again. And then about 6 years ago, she was coming up for parole again. She had come up for parole a few times, and I, you know, would just not talk about it, wouldn't have anything to do with it. But it looked like she might get out. And that was not going to work. I never went to the trial because I was not credible because I was on the streets, working the streets. And I always regretted that. And when she came up for parole, I had to make the decision to testify against her. And I did. And so we have not had any contact since then. And I know it was the right thing to do. My mother is not well, and she's not remorseful, and therefore she can never come out. So that's how that's worked.
Do you have any advice for transgender alcoholics afraid to come out?
Hello, my trans people. I love you. I'm rooting for you. I am a Black lesbian, and I rarely talk about my preference because it's not, because one, I'm not trying to pick up someone in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I will tell you that it was very difficult. I've sponsored trans people throughout my recovery, actually. It was very difficult for me to come out. And, you know, I was raised Baptist, so, and I don't practice organized religion as a way of life for me, but I understand if it brings piece to someone who does. I don't have any aversion to it. It just is not a fit. When I came out, I went to the chapter We Agnostics because I was either going to get gay or get drunk. And it says, we find that the realm of the spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive. It is never exclusive or forbidding. It is open, we believe, to those who earnestly seek. I will always remember that because I remember I was in so much torment. I said, I'm hanging my hat on this. I'm hanging my hat on this. And I remember when my daughter, she had gone on my Facebook because we had just met. Like we hadn't even seen each other. And she goes, I got to ask you something. I said, well, ask me anything. Or like one of our first conversations, she goes, are you gay? You know, and I was nervous because I've been out for a long time. And I said, yeah, is that a problem? She goes, oh no, I was with a girl once. I was like, oh, look, that's so cute with a girl. So, and I said, how did you know? She goes, cause there is no man on your Facebook. I said, and there will never be, you know? So, yeah, my suggestion is, you know, to really take a look at step two. That was very important for me. What power am I praying to? What power am I? It says I could have a God of my own understanding. I don't even call it God, I call it spirit, that I could have a power of my own understanding. So I have to believe, if I'm gonna go through the rest of the steps, I have to believe that this one is true as well. I thought I had a power of my own understanding, but I didn't. I was still praying to the God in the Baptist church around the corner, and I was going to hell for everything, and that wasn't gonna work. And so I believe that spirit is concerned not with who I sleep with, but how I treat people. How I treat people. I am not made in error. I am not made in error, and I am not a sin. I have loving relationships with consensual adults, and whatever we do is what we do. And so I hope that helps. I put my number in that chat for anyone to call me. I'm always available to talk. Thank you.
Thank you. Candace, how long should I wait before I take the steps?
No, there's no waiting. There's no waiting. I've heard, you know, crazy things, and you've already figured out that I'm not shy. I will never be, because I've seen so many people, you know, wait so long, they go back to drinking, right? Or they get with a sponsor who doesn't know how to work the steps, and they're so consumed with ego, they won't say that. You know, the best thing you can do is go into a book study. For someone who is trying to sponsor, go into a book study and a step study, and you know, do it with your sponsee if you don't want to turn them over to someone else. But when someone comes to me and they are new, I wait about 3 weeks before I have them read the book with me. And that's only because I need them to be consistent with checking in, you know, because everyone is, oh, I want what you have. But when you ask them to take action, so they need to be in meetings consistently. They need to be there early. I don't want them sharing because they're new. Say you're new. That's it. And listen, right? And then we start reading the book, and they read a chapter with a dictionary, and they highlight anything that they identify with. And then we read it together. Everything my sponsee does, we sit down and we go through it together. We go through the whole book like that. So I don't believe in waiting. I also don't believe in staying on step one for a long time. It's like my sponsor said I should stay on step one for a year. That's crazy. You follow what the book says. The book says we admitted it. Admit it.
Thank you. Have you had to change the way you sponsor during COVID? And how can we be helpful in to the newcomer during this time?
Yeah, I for sure have had to change because I can't sit with them. So I have always sponsored local, out of state, and out of country, because I've always spoken all over the globe in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've also always traveled for work. And so when I sponsor people in that are long distance, they have to have a minimum of 5 years sober. Because I believe for new people, it is important that you see your sponsor. But what we do is we use Zoom for years, well before the pandemic, we would just be on Skype. You know, I sponsor people in London. And so you have a time difference. I've sponsored people in Sri Lanka. I mean, just way before COVID. So we would be on Skype. They've done inventories with me on Skype. And I mean, hours. So we are like here. And we might log off for like 10 minutes and then get back on. But yeah, so it is making sure that we have eye contact. And, you know, that's why I put my number in the chat, because I don't know what it's like to get sober in a space where you can't even feel the hands of another alcoholic. I remember when my daughter came back into my life, and that first week she came to a meeting with me, and I held her hand and I held the hand of another member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that just like was everything. That was the fourth dimension for me. So since we don't have the benefit of that, I ask newcomers to be consistent with calling other members, getting women's numbers and calling them on a daily basis. It's very similar to what we would do in person, but we are in constant contact. That is very important.
Do you have a favorite Clancy story or?
No. Clancy was my sponsor for 11 and a half years. I left him at 20. So the first year he did not like me because I was obnoxious, and I wasn't that fond of him really, but you know, I needed to have my sobriety saved, and my ego was so out of control. You know, I had been of service in Alcoholics Anonymous in terms of having to go other places since I was 4.5 years sober, you know, and sometimes that can just be dangerous. So I've always had strong sponsors to keep me very grounded and get clear that they're not applauding me, they're applauding what Alcoholics Anonymous can do. And so I came to him, and we were doing a conference together, and I was already scheduled to do this conference before he was my sponsor, but now he's my sponsor. So he goes, what are you doing in the weekend? I said, oh, I'm going to be out of town. He goes, okay. He goes, well, I'm going to be in such and such. I'm like, oh, me too. And he goes, and I'm going to be speaking at such and such. And I go, me too. He goes, why didn't you just tell me that? And I'm like, okay, anyway, whatever. So we go, and his wife at the time was sick, Charlotte. And so he flew in late and he flew out early, but he said, I'm going to order your CD and I'm going to listen to your talk and I'll know if you're lying. I remember him saying that to me. I was like, oh, so I think he's way too busy. Right now, I checked in with my sponsor for 11 and a half years, Monday through Friday, 11 a.m., not 11:01, not 10:59. That was my call time, 11 a.m. And so I was checking in with him. It was like maybe 3 weeks after the conference. And he said, oh, by the way, I listened to your talk. I was like, really? Now he's heard me talk before. And he said, he goes, you have a good message. And I said, thank you. He goes, you're going to help a lot of people. I said, thank you. He goes, there's just one thing. And I remember thinking, what could there possibly be? And he said, when you talk, you say, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? He goes, Candace, we know what you mean. Stop saying that. It's annoying. I was like, oh my God. I just have so many wonderful stories about him. Anywho.
You mentioned you take your sponsees through the traditions. Can you share a little bit about that process, please?
Absolutely. So currently I have two of them that are in the traditions. We're going into tradition 5. So we now incorporate the traditions checklist, but when I take them through the traditions, we go through the 12 and 12 and we read just like we do with the big book. They have everything for a week. So they're going to read those traditions 2 or 3 times on their own before we sit down to read it together. They're going to underline anything that they relate to. I never tell my sponsees what to underline. Because my experience and their experience is going to be different. And so we approach the traditions in 3 ways: what it looks like in Alcoholics Anonymous, what it looks like in their personal relationships, and what it looks like in their professional relationships. The traditions are the most important of everything. They're not just the glue that holds Alcoholics Anonymous together. They are the glue that holds my life together. So it is important when I'm in a relationship to understand our common welfare comes first, not my ego, not my needs, not my wants, right? And a group conscious is, if I'm in a relationship with someone, the group conscious is you and I. We must decide how we want this relationship to look. Tradition 3, do we have a desire to be here? Where is here in this relationship? We established it in tradition 1. So the traditions are freaking amazing, man. Like, I love the tradition. They are so exciting. And so that's, we do it tradition by tradition.
Beautiful. You've been so generous with your time. We've got more questions than there is time. But I'm gonna slide one more in here from the list that you submitted. I just, cause I love it. I hear all the time in meetings, get a sponsor. And I rarely hear get a sponsee. Is it important to get a sponsee?
Absolutely. So for me, I've always sponsored, you know, I remember when I lost all the people I sponsored because I was crazy. And I started saying I want to drink because I did. The obsession to drink had returned. And I lost all of my girls. And that was so painful. I can't even tell you. I had been in their weddings. I had thrown them housewarming parties, bridal showers, baby showers, things I'd never done for anyone or experienced in my life. And so throughout that period, I kept getting sponsees, but they wouldn't stay. And they were all strippers. I don't know what that was about. But like this stripper would ask me, then that stripper would ask me. And I was like, what is, I wasn't even a stripper. I was a hoe. You know what I mean? So, and then they would leave ultimately because they didn't want it. Like they're just one, her sugar daddy or whatever he was brought her like this big Mercedes. She was like, oh, you know, I'm going to try and work it out. It was just the funniest thing. So I always say, you know, to get the number of the newcomer as well when they're getting your number and to call them. But ultimately, you can't force anyone to work with you. So I feel you can be of service in many ways. Ideally, you want to take someone through these steps, but you can be of panels. We have virtual panels, at least here in LA. So there's still opportunities to get back.
All right. Sounds like freedom.
Like, yeah, some motorcycles. They're apparently having fun and feel everyone should hear them.
Well, thank you so much again. You've been so generous. I'd like to, I'm going to go ahead and close the meeting. Everybody will get an opportunity to unmute after the Lord's Prayer and thank Candace again. Thank everyone who participated, home group members for making this possible, Larry for wrangling the questions. And I wonder if I could ask Leanne to please read the last two paragraphs on page 164.
Hey, everybody. My name is Leanne, and I'm an alcoholic. And this is from A Vision for You, page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
All right. Thank you, Leanne. Evan, I don't know if I see, I'm glad you made it in here tonight. Please feel free to stick around after we close the meeting. I will now allow people to unmute at will. Let's circle up, hold hands virtually, and actually say the Lord's Prayer. Our Father.
Our Father.
Who art in heaven.
Our Father. Who art in heaven.
Hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done. On earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. And forgive us our trespasses. As we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation. But deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom. The power and the glory forever and ever.
Amen. Amen. Keep coming back. It works when you work it.
Thank you, Candace.
Just thank brilliant. You so much.
Thanks, Candace.
That was great phenomenal.
Time. Thank you, ma'am, very much. Thank you.
My pleasure. Good to visit Virginia.
So glad you were here.
My sponsor recommended this meeting to me, and I heard everything I needed this evening. I appreciate it.
Right on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, perfect. Right on.
Mm. All right, yeah, you guys. Well, I'm probably going to go feed my cats and just hang out a little bit. I'm still full from the banana nut pancakes I had earlier.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you again so much.
Thank you, yeah. Candace.
Thank you, Candace.
Bye, you guys. Bye, Ebony. Bye, Christine.